We're continuing in Navi. We're up to the book of Shmuel. We're up to what they call Shmuel Bit, the fourth chapter. We learned how Avner ben Ner was assassinated by Yoav. David cursed Yoav. David said that what Yoav did was invalid. And he said, I'm clean of this. Let the blood of Avner fall on Yoav's head and his father's family. His mother's family was David's sister. So David says, let the blood go on the Yoav and his father's family. And from now on, Yoav should be cursed, and in his family there should be a Zav, someone who has some kind of flow, some kind of discharge. That's not a seminal discharge, it's something else. It's some kind of disease called Zav. Mitzora. Machzik bapelech. Someone who needs support, they can't walk. Nofel bacherev, someone in his family who dies by sword. And chasal lachem, someone in his family who will die of hunger, lack of food. And at the end of Yoav's days, when Shlomo comes to kill him, Shlomo, David's son, will ultimately take Yoav to task. And Yoav will say, I'm not letting you kill me until you take all those curses your father put on me and take them back on your family. Take them off of me. Shlomo will agree. And all these curses will come true in David's descendants. David will have grandchildren and great-grandchildren. All these curses will come true. So you got to be careful in life. Yeah, David may place these curses on Yoav. Ultimately, Shlomo will accept them back because Yoav will argue, if you're killing me over what I did, then you can't punish me twice. Kill me and curse me. If you believe I deserve the death penalty for what I did to Avner, that's why you're taking me to task now, then you can't also curse me. You have to take the curses back. And Shlomo does, and they come true on Shlomo's descendants, which are effectively David's descendants. So David leads this huge funeral procession, and he fasts. Everyone comes and offers him to eat, and he fasts. He says, I'm not eating. A great man, a great leader of Israel, died today. And he stands there weeping over Avner and eulogizing him. And he says, how could it be that Avner died like a derelict? He died like a gangster, as though gang warfare. How could that happen? His hands weren't tied. Avner was such a warrior. It says that Yoav asked Avner, if a woman doesn't have hands, how does she do chalitza? If a woman, she's married to a man, her husband passes away, and then they don't have kids, so the brother has a mitzvah to either marry her, or if he declines to marry her, she removes his shoe, she spits in it, and she says, this is what should be done to a man who does not want to give her presentation and rebuild his brother's house. So Yoav asked Avner, if a woman has no hands, how does she remove the shoe off of her brother-in-law? So Avner said, I'll show you. He said, with her mouth. He said, how could she do it with her mouth? So Avner put his hands behind his back and bent over with his mouth to show him. As he was bending over to show him, he wasn't careful. Yoav killed him. That's how Yoav killed him, because technically Avner was a chief general. How'd Yoav get away with it? Yoav was a great warrior, but so was Avner. So our sages say he tricked him. He asked him a halachic question, and as Avner was demonstrating, he killed him. Now, we see from here another interesting concept, that it was obvious that you demonstrate hands-on education, even among adults. If Yoav and Avner, who are adults, they're both generals, chiefs of staff, but when Yoav asks Avner, could you show me what you mean? It was an innocent question. It was legitimate when you learned that you demonstrated what you were teaching, even among adults. So Avner gets buried in Hebron, in Judean territory. And David weeps over his grave. And he says, how could it be that you were killed by people who are so terrible? He says about his own chief of staff. And everyone weeps with David. And the nation that had originally come to form a rebellion against David because they were upset over the killing of Avner, when they saw David's behavior, they rejoined him. And David says, I won't eat a thing today. And the nation likes David the better for the way David behaved after Abner's execution. And after the show is over, so David says to his servants, I want you to know, the truth is that a great man fell today. And I am too weak politically to do anything because my chiefs of staff, Avner and Avishai ben Tsruya, my two nephews, they're too powerful for me. I can't do anything about it right now. But Hashem should pay them back because they did evil. Now, Ish-Boshet, who was actually the king right now, he, Shaul's son, he hears that his chief of staff is dead. Now there's no turning back. So he got very scared. What's he supposed to do now? So there were two people who had had a quarrel with Shaul, and they made up now with Ish-Boshet. Their names were Ba'ana and Rechav. And Ish-Boshet thought they were his friends. And so what they did was they rode in as though they were with the merchants to buy grains from Ish-Boshet. Ish-Boshet was taking a nap. They went into his room. They assassinated him. And then they cut off his head. And they brought it to David, to Hebron. And they said, here you go, here's the head of Ish-Boshet, the son of Shaul, your enemy, who tried to kill you all these years, and Hashem gave you revenge today from Shaul and his seed, and they were expecting that now David would reward them, that they would have great appointment. And David says, I swear by Hashem, who saved me from all harm, that when someone told me that Shaul was dead, he thought, oh, he'd get rewarded by me. I grabbed him and killed him. I didn't give him any reward. Now you wicked people, you're not only reporting, you're telling me you killed this righteous person as he was lying peacefully in bed. You don't think I'll demand of you the evil that you've done? And so David orders them killed and hung, and they take the head of Ish-Boshet and they bury it right next to Avner in Hebron. And when the Jews realize that their leader is finished, so they unite to appoint David as king in Hebron. They say, you've always been our chief general. Hashem told you you should be king. We all accept you. We want you to be king. And the elders of Israel, they come and they agree David should be king, and they anoint David. Even though David was already anointed by Shmuel, they accept him. Now, David was 30 when he became king. He's going to be king for 40 years. He's been king in Hebron for 7 years. The civil war took place for 7 years. At the end of 7 years, he's accepted as king. And now he will move his headquarters to Jerusalem. And he will now remain the remaining 33 years in Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem in ancient times was a much smaller city. It was called Yebus. And one of the challenges in Jerusalem is, where do you get water from? So most of the water in Jerusalem came from a stream called Gihon. Gihon is a stream at the bottom of the hills of Jerusalem. And so the Yebusi had set up irrigation paths from the Gihon Springs. Now, today, we have uncovered tremendous waterways from the Gihon Valley. What they found is that during Chizkiyahu's reign, let's fast forward 2.5 centuries, we're holding the end of the first temple period. Chizkiyahu is king, and the enemy is the Assyrian Empire that has taken down the northern 10 tribes. And Chizkiyahu wants to fortify Jerusalem. Chizkiyahu has a challenge that Jerusalem has just grown about 4 or 5 times its original size because refugees from the Assyrian exile, or Jews who were able to hide out when the Assyrians took over all of Israel, have now joined Chizkiyahu. So the northern 10 tribes who were exiled, the remnants, which number tens, if not hundreds of thousands, come down to Jerusalem. So suddenly Chizkiyahu has a huge Jerusalem to fortify. So what he does is he develops pathways, and he has only a few months to do this before the Assyrian Empire will attack him. Through the mountains, he digs tunnels. He does a few things. He places a lot of earth over the Gihon stream. He makes the Gihon stream underground so that when the Assyrians come, they can't find it. And he makes the irrigation ditches through the mountains so that the Gihon waters can reach Jerusalem, the city, and the enemies won't be able to stop it. And till today, they don't know scientifically how he did it, because they can see that they dug from both sides of the mountain. How do you dig a hole from two sides of the mountain without laser, without ultrasound, and meet? And the irrigation dishes met. Now, it all has to be with a slight incline going downward so that the water will actually get to its goal. When you come to the Kotel, I don't have my phone here. When you come to the Kotel, no, I have a picture there. I took a picture of it. When you come to the Kotel, so you have the plaza in front of the Kotel. If the Kotel's to your right, you're standing in the center of the plaza, the Kotel is to your right, yes? So on your left side, if you look at the wall, you'll see along the wall, you'll see the stones going slightly downward. You'll see a constant downward path of the stones. That's the ancient path of the waterways that were brought all the way to the Beit HaMikdash. They had the waters coming from Hebron. Jerusalem got its water from Hebron. They had the waters traveling from Hebron, and you could still see those stones in a downward slope. Next time you go to the Kotel, look to your left. Kotel to your right. Look to your left at the wall. You'll see the stones going downward. And if you want after class, come down with me. I'll show you. I took a picture of it recently on my phone. Not the bridge. No. If the Kotel's on your right. Okay. So one of the challenges is the water in Jerusalem. So in David's time, there were people there called Yevusi. Yevusi were there from the days of Avraham Avinu. And the Yevusi had set up irrigation ditches in Jerusalem, and they set up idols that were in the shape of a blind man and a crippled man. And on those idols, they had engraved the peace treaty between Avram and Yitzchak and Avimelech. And they said, even a blind man, Yitzchak turned blind in his old age, even a crippled man couldn't enter our city because we have a peace treaty, you guys can't attack us. And with their irrigation ditches, they set up a system of gears, and they had these idols that would move with the water flowing and moving their gears, right? Imagine like a windmill, only it was with swords, so that they didn't need to do anything to fight. They had these idols there that would swing with weapons, and they sat back and they said, you could have a blind man, you could have a crippled person taking care of the city, and no one could take it down. And if that seems extraordinary to you, the Targum on Megillas Esther says that the way King Solomon set up his whole fantastic throne was with a series of gears. The Targum says there were gears. That means King Solomon would just put his weight on one step, and then the gears would start moving, and he had like an electronic elevator that just kept lifting him from step to step. And then he had this mechanically set up eagle that would come swooping down and lift the crown off his head. Then he had a series of magnets that would hold the crown hovering over his head. And that he had songs playing as he was taking up the throne. So all of this was set up by gears, it says in the Targum. So Shlomo is David's son. If 40 years later, they knew how to set up these gear system. It's logical that back then the Yavusi also knew how to set up these gear system. So that's what that was the situation. Now, David says, if anyone can stop the waters from running in their ditches, then we could conquer Jerusalem. And David hated the Yavusi. David always wanted Jerusalem as the fortification, as his capital. So David says, whoever can do it will be appointed as the chief of staff. So what Yoav does is he takes a young tree and he bends it down and he uses it to catapult himself into the city. And then when he's in the city, he's a powerful warrior and Hashem helps him and he succeeds in entering. Once he's in, why not? Yoav was a big tzaddik. He brought him to court. The court sided with Yoav. David didn't side with Yoav. But the court sided with Yoav. Yoav's argument was, if you were able to kill his brother with one blow, then you could have maimed him with that same blow. You didn't have to kill him. He said, you had no right to kill the brother Amasa ben Yeser. So, and the court sided with Yoav, with all due respect to David. He brought him to Beis Din. And when Yoav dies, it says Yoav was buried in the desert. Our sages say, why would you bury a person in the desert? It says he was buried in his house in the desert. So our sages have a tradition, Yoav didn't have a house in the desert. The pasuk means his house was a desert. Why was his house a desert? He made a huge house, and the house was filled with food, and anyone who wanted could walk in and eat. That's what it means, is that he was buried in his house in the desert, that his house was like a desert. Just like people feel free to walk in the desert, so too people felt free to walk into Yoav's house. Imagine that, chief of staff, and what he's busy with when he amasses his wealth is to feed the poor. His house is the massive soup kitchen in Israel. Anyone who wants can come and eat. That's Yoav ben Tzeruya. Yoav was a big tzaddik. Yoav wasn't an evil person. You see also that the court sided with him. And you see that Hashem helped him in all his military endeavors. That means he was a big tzaddik. So when David sees that, he says, Ribon Shalom, I want to conquer your city. And it says Hashem helped him, that he was able to catapult himself into the city too and help Yoav. But Yoav, again, gains the claim to being the chief of staff. The king of Tzor, to our north, there's the city of Tyre, Tzor, in the area of Lebanon. And over there, you have the most lush and beautiful trees growing. It's one of the things that the Hezbollah takes advantage of. It's very hard. It's like Vietnam. You know, in Vietnam, you have a jungle. Go fight in a jungle. Everything's growing. So in the north, in Lebanon, not far from where we are, things are growing. There's lush. You wouldn't know that there are neighbors. Things grow so well there naturally. So back in the day, they had the greatest cedar trees north of Israel in Tzor. So Hiram sends cedar trees and his great carpenters to build a palace for David. And when David sees that his neighbors want to help him in building himself a palace, he realizes he's headed for success. The Philistines hear that the Jews have a new king, David, who was Shaul's son-in-law. And so the Philistines come to attack David. David enters his fortification. He begins by entering his fortified Mitzudah. And the Philistines spread out as they approach him. David asks Hashem, should I advance towards the Philistines? Will you let me win them? And Hashem says, go, you will win. And David succeeds in the first battle, and the Philistines are on the run. When they run, they leave behind their idols. The Mishnah says that when a pagan leaves behind his idol at a time of war, that idol is still an idol. He believes in it. It was weighing him down. He dropped it. But he'll come back and he'll worship that idol again. So you're not allowed to use that idol. Now, a pagan's idol is prohibited from deriving benefit from. But what would happen if a fellow pagan would take that idol and say, you're not an idol, and bash off its nose, poke out its eye? If he would say, that's not an idol, so then you're allowed to derive benefit from it. So the Philistines left behind their gold and silver idols. So David has one of his men is Ittai HaGitti. Ittai was a Philistine from the city of Gat. Ittai HaGitti. And every time they'd leave behind idols, David would tell his men, don't touch it. Because once it enters Jewish possession, you could no longer make it permissible. So leave it. It should be no one's. Let Ittai take it. Ittai would take it and say, this isn't an idol. Poke out its eye. David, you could have it. This isn't an idol either. Poke out its eye. David, you could have it. Every time Ittai, being a non-Jew, but he was one of David's great soldiers. He was one of David's generals. But he didn't convert at this point. I don't know if he converted later. It says, Ittai, it is a loophole. But loopholes are okay. So Ittai would disqualify all the idols, and then David and his men could enjoy that loot. The Philistines regroup, and they come back. And he asks Hashem, should I attack again? And Hashem says, no. Go around the back, and I want you to attack them from the rear. And you will stay there and not attack until you hear me in front of you, until you hear a sign. So David goes, and Chazal say that the Philistines saw him behind and approached. And they were so close that you could see their eyes. They were staring David in the face as they approached. And David's men kept saying, can we attack? And David said, no. Hashem said, wait. And the Philistines come closer. And the Philistines come closer. And they're holding right in front of David and his men. When suddenly David and his men hear a rustling in the trees. And now they know Hashem is saying attack. Our sages say this was the equivalent of King Saul's test. You remember Shaul was told, don't attack until Shmuel brings the sacrifice. And Shaul saw the Philistines making military moves at him. So Shaul went and attacked before it was time. David was given an equivalent test. Hashem says, don't move until you hear me. Until you see a sign, I'm going before you. And David succeeded in his test. And so he wins the Philistines. And in the Philistines suffer a great defeat. Now from the days of Shimshon, from Samson, until this point, the Philistines had the upper hand. This is the turning point in Jewish history. David is going to be the one to take down the Philistines. Now the Philistines have a special enmity for David. Because the Philistines had taken over Israel, and then this Hulk, I don't know what to call him. What would you call Shimshon? A man who's as wide as this whole room. Superman, I mean, Hulk, bigger than Hulk. You know, multiply Hulk by 15 times. This extraordinary man, he defeats them. And no one can take him down. And then when they think they got him down, he brings down the house and kills all their leaders and kills masses, thousands and thousands of men and women, and disappears. Because after he killed everyone, he died, but his family pulled away his body, so that when the Philistines came, they didn't find his body there. So they believed that it was all a trick and that he killed all the Philistines and now he was hiding. So for the next 20 years, the Philistines are always looking at night, where's Samson? Maybe he's coming, right? It's like the Loch Ness Monster, yes? Maybe he's out there in the woods. So for 20 years after Samson dies, they're scared of him. Now when they caught Samson, what they did was they put him in prison, and every Philistine would bring his wife and say, sleep with him, maybe we'll have a kid like that. And it says that Samson in prison had a long line of women, and he was forced to sleep with woman after woman his whole time in prison, because they all hoped, maybe I'll have a kid like him. You see what interested them. And then finally they have this huge Hulk. He's called Goliath. And a little kid comes out against him. He's called David. And the Philistines believed that Shimshon succeeded because he was big, he was massive, right? So when David comes out against Goliath and David wins, to the Philistines this is a tremendous blow. Wait a second, how did the Jew boy win? Wait a second, how could that be? Wait, we were waiting for this day. We finally have our Samson and it still doesn't work. So they wanted David dead. Now that David keeps going up in the ranks and he becomes king, so it becomes even more dangerous to the Philistines. They attack. And now the tide is turning and they're going to lose. But from the days of Shimshon until this point, the Philistines had the upper hand. It's from this point onward that the Philistines are going to dwindle and dwindle under David. David sets up an army of 30,000 men. And he says, let's bring up the ark to Jerusalem. And they place the ark on a wagon. When David had spoken to Shaul, he had misspoken. He said, if Hashem riled you up against me, let this be an offering before him. Hashem says, you're blaming me? Saul is chasing you and you say, I'm the one who riled him against you? I make people make mistakes? You're going to see you're going to make a stupid mistake. Even children will know better. You make mistakes. I don't make people make mistakes. And so when it comes time to take the ark up to Jerusalem, David makes a mistake. It says in the Torah, the Levites carry the Aron. He puts it on a wagon. And we have two people, Uzzah and Achio, who are accompanying the wagon. And as the wagon moves, Uzzah is concerned the ark might fall off the wagon, so he touches the ark and he drops dead. And he touches the ark to support it. It shouldn't fall. But he drops dead. And David is very upset. He says, we were celebrating this day. And Uzzah died. He names the place Peretz Uzzah. And he stops the procession. He says, I can't continue bringing the ark up. He leaves the ark by a man named Oved Edom HaGitti. Oved Edom HaGitti has a wife and 6 daughters-in-law. Every one of them gives birth to 6 kids the next 9 months. So David understands that Hashem blessed his house. And so David arranges a new celebration to bring up the ark. This is the Medrash everyone knows. This is the Medrash your children will tell you. That Uzzah went to hold the ark and he made a mistake. You're not allowed to touch the ark. But there's another opinion in the Medrash that's not well known. The other opinion says that Uzzah and Achio were charged. These two brothers were responsible to take care of the Aron. And then Uzzah felt the need to relieve himself. So he sat on the side right next to the Aron and relieved himself. And that's when he dropped dead. He made a mistake. The question was, what was the mistake? So the Medrash your children will tell you, the Medrash Rashi quotes, is that he reached to support the Aron. It's very bothersome. He tried to do the right thing. You hear the other Medrash, you could hear a little bit better why he dropped dead over it. And now every time they walk 6 footsteps with the ark, they bring sacrifices. And they have dancing and singing in front of the ark. And David is dancing with all his might. And all of Israel has come together to accompany the ark in its ascent to Jerusalem. And as they approach the great city of David, which is not what they call, the great city of David, his wife, Michal, looks out the window. And she sees him dancing. And she thinks lowly of him. And now we will have our intro to our next class in the Jewish home. Michal is the daughter of Shaul. Her father was a very modest man. Very modest throughout his life. When they wanted to appoint him king, he went hiding. When the Navi told him he would be the first king of Israel, he didn't tell anyone. And even when he was king, if he had to relieve himself, he went privately into a cave and covered himself up when he thought he was all alone. He didn't know David was hiding in the cave with all his men. He thought he was all alone, and he was so modest that David took a step back. He said, this is an angel of God. Here he thinks he's all alone, and look at how modest he is in the bathroom. And so David takes a step back. He says, I can't touch this man. He sees his modesty. So Michal is accustomed to extraordinary modesty. It's a good thing. And she sees David that as he's dancing, He was wearing some kind of robe, and a robe like a skirt can go up as a person's dancing. And she sees that his private parts are revealed here and there as he's dancing. So she sees his dancing, and she goes out in front of everyone, and she says, "Manichbad Hayom, what an honorable day. The king of Israel today revealed himself in front of the maids and servants, like one of the empty people out here." She couldn't wait till he was home, right? She comes out to tell him this. And David tells Michal, "I danced with all my might before Hashem, who chose me over your father, and chose me rather than anyone in your family, and gave me the responsibility to guide his nation, the nation of God. And so I dance before Hashem, and I'm willing to put myself down before Hashem, and I have no problem with the maids and the servants, and I will dance with them because I'm honoring Hashem, and that's my honor, that I merit to honor Hashem." And the pasuk ends the story recording that Michal didn't have a child till the day she died. The pasuk seems to side with David. And so the question is, what went on over here? What was Michal saying? What did David answer her? And why does the pasuk seem to side with David? And this leads us, we segue now into our class on the Jewish home. And our listeners are welcome to look it up. Today is, I guess, in the Gregorian calendar, the 2nd of July. So that's our class on the Jewish